Someone pointed out to me that when we talk about discipline, so it's not my field. I would have taken that criticism graciously.
What did they say?
It's not my field. My field. In other words, I'm not a disciplinarian by any means. Excuse me?
Barry wants to go beat them up.
In French, they say it's none of your business. Anyway, with kids like this. So, but the discipline is not my field. So, therefore, how dare I stand here in front of you and lecture about discipline? So, I initially took it very nicely. Of course, I had a teretz because I said, I'm not lecturing about discipline. There's a professional work that we were referring to. I got made sure everybody has copies. I'm sure they didn't do their homework of reading it all. I noticed by the pile. Oh, some did, but the pile is still pretty much there. And therefore, so my reaction was, number one, I'm not setting myself up as an authority. I'm just we're reading this together and we'll discuss it. Fine. But then, you know, when the ego is wounded, so you start to think, well, a discipline is not my field. Well, what is my field when it comes to education? And when I tried to answer that question, I almost had no alternative other than to say discipline, and that I knew for sure wasn't my field. So I really felt I'm in rough shape. But then, excuse me, let me finish, please, let me finish. Then I discovered my field in education, and it's called criticism. That's right. My only field is criticism. However, I do have a qualification that is sort of a backhanded qualification, besides just my innate and very talented ability to criticize and to be critical. And that is, I think I earned at least the equivalent of a PhD in discipline and education by all the mistakes that I've made. Because you do learn from your mistakes, or if you do learn from your mistakes, you can really have some qualifications. So, with all of this having been said, and apologizing if I'm not the appropriate source of these directives, I'd like to share with you some of the ideas that we find over here. Now, I find this summary at the back, and it's always good to do a summary, because when you read a summary, and you get a better sense of what's going on when you read it. In fact, they say if you want to do speed reading, the first thing they advise in a speed reading course is read the table of contents. And they say that when you read the table of contents of a book, then you have a better sense of the perspective, and you can read the book faster. It's a psychological, educational fact, whatever it is. I've read this numerous times. And so I guess having a sense of what's going on and the overview, it makes it easier and more speedy. More, you can more speedily and maybe more understanding fill in the blanks. So anyway, so this at the end.
Summary in the back just came.
I have no idea. I don't know, but I read it. I think it makes a lot of sense. Okay, what? Well, can I? Please, we don't have too much time. Let me just do this. He has here a very thing. Just the concept itself of teacher rights, student rights, discipline fallacies, which is always good, and what makes for an assertive teacher. So I think that this is a worthwhile discussion. So let's. Teachers have rights. I think that's very important, and students have rights. Now, I'm not even sure that teachers will tell you that they have rights. In fact, I'm sure that many teachers who come into a classroom and they feel the energy and the hefkerus and the maybe rebellion or resentment or hyperactivity or something in the classroom, they probably forget that they even have rights. because they are so busy putting out the fires and dealing with, and I hear this from teachers, it's a terrible thing. It's a, it's you know, an inexperienced teacher is, I would love to advise teachers, when you teach first, teach your second year first. Skip your first year of teaching, go straight to the second year. Oh, well said. You're correct about that. but the idea is that that first year could be a killer. And when the class wipes the floor with me, and they're constantly, and I'm putting out fires, or you, and stop, and you, and shot, pay attention, and stop chewing gum, Mela. And you know, I can't teach a word. Well, you know, and it's a problem. And I think teachers forget that they do have rights. And if a person knows they have rights, and I would say something as if they review their rights, and I think I saw some footnote here, I'm not sure, but that somebody said, you know, they should have their rights printed up in bold type and review them constantly, and maybe keep them, you know, on the desk like this. What are my rights? I need some rights over here. I have to consult my lawyer. What are my rights over here? Because I'm in the jungle. It could be very helpful. So let's first talk about teacher rights. To establish a classroom structure, to establish a classroom structure and routine that provides the optimal learning environment in light of your own personal needs. Now, this is a very full statement, I think. First of all, that a teacher has a right to establish, to set the structure and routine in the classroom. We forget that right. Some teachers, and if you think this is petty stuff, I don't agree with you. Because I know that a lot of teachers forget that they have any rights, and especially a right to establish structure and routine that provides the optimal learning environment. Because in order to have a learning environment, there has to be a certain structure, and there has to be a certain routine. And they can't be constantly, you keep quiet, you shut up, you this, you that, you leave the classroom, you go to the principal, you, I'm going to call your parent, you, I wish you were... Come on. You can't do that. You can't. So there has to be this. There is established, and established, I think, means something else. An establishment is clear. Something that's established is not hidden in the inner recesses of the teacher's mind that I remember dreaming about when I was in school, that there was such an idea. But it's an establishment. It's communicated. It's clear. This is established. There is a structure, and there's a routine, and this is what's expected, and this is necessary for the optimal learning environment. And I think this is also very important. It's true that it says here, in the light of your own personal needs, which is something that a teacher has a right to have personal needs, have personal style, have personal weaknesses, have personal shortcomings, have personal likes and dislikes, have hang-ups. We're all human beings. So that's part of it. But the main goal of it is not, it's in the light of your personal needs. I don't know if this guy meant all these things, but the goal is to provide the optimal learning environment. In other words, I'm a teacher. I'm getting paid, supposedly, to do a job. And the job is not discipline. In fact, in halacha, it seems that, we shouldn't get the wrong idea, but that if you're teaching Torah, the heter to take money for it may taka be just for the discipline and not for the learning, but that's besides the point. That's not so poshut in halacha, what you're actually allowed to get paid for. But lemaisa, my job is to teach, and I have a right and an obligation to establish and make it very clear, this is what we do in this classroom, I like the fact that he doesn't say rules, because rules are definitely made to be broken. And what that means is, and it's not a joke, and it's not just a sad reality, but the concept of a rule sounds like a dogma, like, this is the rule. My rule is you have to keep your finger on the place. Some people don't. Some teachers drive kids crazy, little kids. Now, maybe it's a good rule, I don't know. But I was never too sympathetic. You must keep your finger on. Some kids can't keep their fingers any place. And some kids are going to look like, you must look inside. Some kids can't look inside. Some kids, okay, there's all kinds of things. You must sit in your seat, That might be a good rule. But there are certain people that always have to stand. Look, they can't sit in their seats. There's plenty of seats around here, but they have to stand. So anyway, but whatever it is, but there has to be structure that is necessary to provide the optimal learning environment, and that has to be very. The optimal learning environment, and taking into consideration the specific needs that the teacher has. Yes, sir.
When you say optimal learning environment, right? You said that some people need a stand, some people need a sit, right?
No, that has nothing to do with optimal learning environment. Optimal learning environment means, no, we're talking about the teacher. The optimal learning environment, so that, so that's what it means. Yes, that's what it means in vis-a-vis the teacher. That the teacher should be able to do, now, learning, by the way, does not necessarily have to mean teaching. There are teachers, I always tell the story. I think it's such a chokhmah. I had a 12th, I guess he was a 12th grader at the time, came to me once in the old days in the valley and said about a certain teacher, a chemistry teacher, and he said, this teacher never taught one word to the class, and we never learned more from anybody. What did he do? He had chaburas, four in a group, four in every group, had 10, 5, 4, whatever, he had 5, 6 groups of four. And he had all of the paperwork, all of the assignments, and all of the tests in a file available to the students. And each group worked together at its own pace. And all he did was go from one group to another to mentor them and to help them. And they said he didn't teach. He never stood in front of the class. He never taught. They did everything on their own through the assignments, through this, he says, and we never learned more from anybody else. So, you know, there's different teaching approaches, but we're talking about an environment where the teacher has a right to make sure that the class is learning. Okay, let's move on, okay? That's number one. Now, again, why am I making such a big deal about this? Because we forget our rights. If a person knows a teacher, and especially a yeshiva teacher, they after the class gets finished with them, after the class gets finished making fun and making trouble and throwing spitballs and who knows what else they're doing over there, the teacher just thinks the only right I have is to run out of the class when I'm out of here and to go home and cry. So,
is it not true that the students are really having a lack of acceptance to what's being implemented?
Well, what I think the contention over here is sometimes a lack of acceptance comes from a lack of focus and presentation and strength of conviction of the teacher. A teacher there's a beautiful piece from, what's his name? He's a big Israeli, no, maybe he's not even Israeli. So a famous educator, is there a Ginon or somebody, Chaim, maybe this is, I don't know, I have it someplace in one of my files, who talks about the power of a teacher. A teacher can, if they know how to wield it, have the ultimate power. But if you don't realize that you have this influence, you have this power, and if you don't structure the use of that power in the proper way, you could just become a victim. So anyway, let's just go on. Second, what?
So that's really the prerequisite.
That's right.
The teacher. Skill. If you don't have the skill.
Well, but this is.
Your rights mean nothing.
Well, you're right too. But even with the skill, if you don't realize your rights, you may not implement the skills. Let's go. To determine and request appropriate behavior from the students, which meets your needs and encourage the positive social and educational development of the child. That's also very, very, very. I have a right. Yeah, I have a right to determine. In other words, the teacher has a right to set the standard of appropriate behavior. Now, I don't know if in this review he goes over it, but it has to be communicated, it has to be clear, it has to be understood, and at some point in this discussion I think he points out that the consequences for the lack of commitment to this behavior have to be very clear as well, to the extent, and we mentioned this last time I think, that it's almost as if when I, the student, do not do that which is the appropriate behavior or the appropriate activity or the appropriate response, then, and if there's a consequence, I have chosen that consequence on my own. It's a choice. It's not being forced on me. It's not a power struggle. It's okay. Which used you last time for this also, for some reason, I have some recollection. You know, okay, you chose the consequence. So that's it. you know, that's your choice. And it creates less of a combative environment. And if it's clearly...
I mean, you give them the ability to do it.
What?
The kid gets up there and says that he's starting to cause a ruckus. Do you say you can continue with the ruckus?
No,
that is, where you say you cannot do that.
No, but the consequence has to be something that stops. Part of the consequence has to be... Part of the consequences has to be stopping the interference. Let's just continue. Okay, well, that has to be. If that's not the part of the consequence, you didn't accomplish it. Okay, which meet your needs and encourage the positive social and educational development of the child. Now, here's something that's also very important. Social things are very significant, too. There are people in a classroom who are putting down others, insensitive to others, hurting others, whether it's their feelings or their body, sometimes throwing things at them, making faces at them. I don't know what they do in the classroom. But these things, there's a social dynamic in the classroom as well as an educational. So even if you're successful at education, but if in the classroom there's a negativity that goes on because certain people have, there's cliques, they've ganged up on a certain individual, they're ostracizing somebody, this type of thing is also something that's part of the teacher's right to have a classroom where everybody is interacting properly together, both on educational and on a social level. Okay, let's go to the third thing. To ask for help from parents, principal, when you need assistance with a child. Now, this is very interesting, because on the one hand, the teacher that, I'm going to call the principal. I got to call your parents. This teacher is finished. Because what this teacher has done publicly is admitted incompetence, admitted weakness, admitted, helplessness. You know, I can't do it. I can't do anything. I need the parents. I need the principal. What do you mean? This is what it says here. I don't care what it says here. But what it should say here, I think it's what it says, is to ask for help from parents, principal, etc. when you need assistance with a child. This has to be a relatively rare occurrence. Because you could say, well, a kid's misbehaving. I need assistance from the principal. I need the parents. Then you have nothing. But when a person has to know that I do have that right, and that's also very important. Can I just
call the parent without discussing having the parent talk?
Wait! I want to mention that. The 1 second. What I think this means on another level is as follows: is that sometimes when a teacher calls a parent, or calls in a principal, or calls or speaks to the principal, the kid gets very offended. The kid gets very, you know, like, what are you doing behind my back? It's Lashon Hora. It's Moitzi Shemra. Where do you come to do it? Yeah, you ruined this. Now I was supposed to go. My father was supposed to take me to a baseball game, and now he's not going to do it, and this and that, and who knows what. So, but no, this is part of my rights as a teacher. If you don't do those things that are expected of you, and if I feel that the only way that I can really deal with this problem is by speaking to your parents or by speaking to your or to the principal or so forth, that I have that right. It's clear, it's upfront, it's understood, and therefore it minimizes the taina, number one. Number two, what it does is it provides that thing that I always like to talk about, the stick in the closet. It creates an environment where there is a consequence here which might be a lot more painful or annoying than just the consequence of, well, because of this, you can't go to recess for 15 minutes or whatever the consequences that
that's
they
okay
make up. No, I'm not. What? Which?
No recess.
Well, the recess, I don't know. I think that's a big question, because if the kid doesn't go to recess, he's going to be so pent up and so hyper and so this that, you know, the recess could be what saves the day. You know, there's one school recently that they had a whole discussion. It was a terrible mistake. They were cutting the gym periods because they needed more time for something. And they found out that the kids are crazy. The kids are crazy. The gym, you don't need a gym because of workout for health, and you don't need the gym because of to fulfill the state requirements. You need the gym periods to keep the sanity. that they should have an outlet to let out the excess energy. So that could be a mistake too. Anyway, but okay, so this is something, if they know up front that this is a right that I have, that this is part of my rights to ask for help from parents of this, it's much less of an argument. Let's just try to finish the next one, and then we'll continue next time. Student rights. Have a teacher who is in a position and will help them limit their inappropriate self-disruptive behavior. Now, this is very interesting. Students don't know that they have these rights. Students may on a conscious level not be aware of this, but it's not true. Deep down, everybody wants to have a teacher that will help them limit their inappropriate and disruptive behavior. Because as much as the Yetzer Hara tells them they want to be disruptive and they want to do inappropriate and say inappropriate and make wisecracks and everything else, there's a Tzelem Elokim, and there's a Kovod HaOdom, and there's a sense of my own personal self-worth that tells me that I really don't want to act inappropriately. The class clown in therapy will admit to you, I don't know, to you, to the therapist, I don't know to whom, but that I don't want to act this way. But this is the only recognition that I get. This is the only way I know. This is how I survived all the years. I'm not happy with myself. Just like the person who drinks. And he's not happy with himself, that he's addicted, that he's so dependent. He doesn't feel good about himself. His self-image is in the garbage. So the students have to know that they have this right to have a teacher who is in a position, has the authority and the power and the commitment and will help them limit their inappropriate. Now, something else happens too. If they look, listen to this, there's a chokhmah here too. If they look at the limitation of the teacher of their inappropriate behavior and this self-disruptive behavior, they look at it as a student, right? You know what you've done? You turned the tables around. I am not fighting with the teacher because the teacher is trying to get me not to be inappropriate. It's my right to have the teacher keep me appropriate. Wow. That switch all of a sudden puts me on board, and I say, hey, I want that. Of course. I expect it. I just want to finish this. Okay. I want that. I expect. What?
Students ever
going to
think that?
What's that?
You
know which student? When the student that hears that, excuse me, I want to finish, please. The student that hears its rights read, do you read them their rights? And maybe you read them their rights once a month. And maybe you remind them of the... Okay, 1 second. Okay.
Right, not to kill yourself.
Listen, no. Excuse me. You have a right to have me at this particular time in a position to stop you to limit your inappropriate and self-disruptive behavior. Okay? So now let me just continue, please. Okay, don't get insulted.
The question is,
I know I didn't declare the right before. Okay, next, 1 second. To have a teacher who is in the... I just want to finish before this thing. To have a teacher who is in the position to and will provide positive support for appropriate behavior. Now here is a big one, gentlemen. Can I have your attention, please? One second, all ages. I have to be adapted. Yeah, listen to this. To have a teacher who's in the position and will provide positive support for appropriate behavior. Now, this means positive reinforcement, and this means helping a person. This means expecting appropriate behavior, and this means that it's my right to have the assistance from the teacher and the support from the teacher and the recognition from the teacher to act appropriately, which makes me much more motivated and empowers me to be able to have that. Let's just do the third thing and then with to choose how to behave and know the consequences that will follow. This is critical. Yeah, Rabbi Yisai, critical. It's two things. If in a classroom there's a feeling that I don't have choice, it's the seeds of rebellion. The lack of choice is the seeds of rebellion. Because everybody, Hashem created us with this craving for freedom, with this free spirit, with this desire to reject the 1 second, 1 second, let me finish. You'll get equal time at 6:30. Yeah, to reject the oil, to reject the shibud, to want to be free of shibud, and therefore, that's why we get so much schar for accepting the shibud. Now, so let me just finish. Now, when we provide choices, when we package this as a choice, what we've done is it is a choice, and then you'll have equal time at 6:30. Yeah. So it's like this. When we packaged it in a way of a choice, what we've done on a subtle level is bypass the Yetzer Hara at this. The Yetzer Hara that says, I don't want to be forced, I don't want to be told, I don't want to, you're going to tell me what to do, oh, I'll show you. You must do this, I'll show you. You better do that, oh, no, no. You know, it's, so, like I said, listen, Rabbi Yisai, yeah, this is the expected behavior. And in the text of this, I think they point out that there shouldn't be too many expectations. Because if you have a long list of 25 expectations, nobody remembers and nobody cares and everybody can feel overwhelmed, even though there's 25 choices is also too much. But to choose the behavior, there's, let's say, 5 things. These are the main things that we expect in this classroom. And it's your choice. If you If you choose to behave inappropriately, then you have chosen the appropriate consequence, which was upfront, clear, maybe written on top of the board someplace, but it's very clear. When I do this, I know this action of inappropriate behavior is a choice for this particular consequence. And that, as we mentioned before, takes away a lot of conflict. It empowers students, it motivates. Now, I just want to conclude. All of these things are subtleties. Nothing is straightforward, nothing is perfect, nothing is going to work all the time. But there's subtleties and nuances in human psychology, which I believe, and I think this is very psychologically sound so far, that if we can recognize, feel, internalize, and communicate these rights and values both to our own and the students, I think that we have a much better chance at creating an environment which can really accomplish some true learning.
It's not a choice.